The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this evening I thought I would talk about reflecting on intention. And I thought we would, I'll talk for a little while and then I thought we'd do some reflection. So pretty much everything we do, our actions, movements of body, our speech, even actions of our mind have an intention behind them. And these intentions may be skillful or unskillful, leading us to do skillful actions or unskillful actions. And intentions themselves generally are connected with the views and beliefs that we hold. So our intentions align themselves with our aims and purposes, our goals related to that view, and then we act out of those intentions. So for example, if you have the belief or the view that happiness comes from an accumulation of status or wealth, then that belief will probably produce intentions to do things to increase status and wealth. So our views are kind of central in terms of looking at our intentions. So in terms of the understanding of the Buddhist practice, the basic value system or belief system or view system is around finding ways to become free of suffering, to become free of this sense that we have that things are not quite right, that we don't quite feel in alignment with the way things are. So this is kind of the definition, in a sense, of suffering from the Buddhist perspective, that there's a kind of a disconnect with things as they are and how we'd like them to be. So the view, the kind of basic fundamental view in our Buddhist practice is around finding ways to understand that suffering and to find ways to let go of its cause, which will result in a letting go or a release from that suffering and the cultivation of qualities that support that release. But this is kind of the fundamental orientation of our practice, is looking for ways to navigate in our lives such that we reduce the dissonance that we feel. And this view around suffering is pretty much diametrically opposed from our usual thought about what would bring happiness for us. You know, we usually think about having things and, you know, getting things that we want, being able to control the environment so that it is in line with the way we want it. That's what we think of as happiness. It's very deeply ingrained. It's cultural. It's human to want things to be pleasant in our environment, to control and manipulate our environment such that it is in line with our wishes. And yet, this acting on this over and over again, trying to get what we want, get rid of what we don't want, somehow create and rearrange the world to be the way we'd like it to be, that actually keeps us on this, in this place of dissonance. So this reorientation around suffering is kind of fundamental in terms of looking at intention. if our belief that happiness comes from getting what we want and arranging our world, we'll behave in certain ways. And the recognition that we come to, actually, as we start to observe the patterns that we have about trying to get what we want and get rid of what we don't want, is that those patterns actually contribute to our unhappiness and our dissatisfaction. It doesn't actually work to try to get what we want. It may work for a little while. We may have a few moments of sense of things being okay, but very quickly that okayness begins to fall apart, and the next thing we need to do is figure out how to make the next moment okay again. So if we have some sense of this reorientation around suffering, if we have a sense of this reorientation about what will lead to a true happiness, and from a Buddhist perspective, what leads to true happiness is letting go of things that lead us to this kind of dissatisfaction, this kind of suffering. Letting go of patterns and habits that are motivated out of greed, out of aversion, out of delusion. So if we have some sense of this truth or the efficacy of this view around suffering, that the suffering is caused by this habitual pattern around wanting and not wanting, then it may begin to reorient our intentions. If we understand this teaching is applied to ourselves, we understand that letting go of this wanting, letting go of this desire to continually fix things or align things with the way we want them to be, as opposed to coming into alignment with things as they are. If we reorient around that view, then our intentions begin to reorient towards the letting go of that wanting. Letting go of that wanting to have things be kind of perfect or the way we'd like them to be. And if we look at how this relates to others, that others are subject also to these truths, that others also suffer in the same way, it inclines us towards kindness and compassion towards others. So these aspects that I've just mentioned, the sense of letting go of that wanting and the aspects of kindness and compassion when we think about how others also suffer, these are the three main aspects of what is called wise view or wise intention in the Buddhist Eightfold Path. So explicitly stated, they are the intention towards renunciation or the letting go. I mean, renunciation, the word renunciation has a bad rap. We don't like that word. But really, it means letting go. It means letting go of that craving to have things be the way we want them to be. So letting go of that endless cycle of wanting to fix, to change, control, to have, to not have things that are unpleasant, to have things that are pleasant. So the intention towards renunciation, the intention towards kindness, and the intention towards compassion. So the Buddha, in his reflection about intention and thought, basically, in one of his meditations, he said, I realize that there's basically two categories of thought. There's thoughts that are based in thoughts of sense desire, ill will, and cruelty on one side, and thoughts of renunciation of kindness and compassion on the other side. And he saw in his exploration of these thoughts that the thoughts that were rooted in wanting things to be the way he wanted them to be, or in a thought of ill will or a thought of cruelty, that it led to an affliction, a kind of a suffering for either himself or others or for both. And when he saw that, when he looked at thoughts that were rooted in kindness, compassion, or letting go, he saw that they did not lead to affliction for himself or others or both. And so from that reflection, and actually he was interesting, you know, in this particular sutta that I'm talking about, he reflected, when he reflected about these thoughts of cruelty, of sense desire and ill will, he said, you know, this does not lead to a good place. These thoughts are not helpful. I should let these thoughts go. They don't support me. They don't support liberation. They don't support happiness. So these are not helpful, not skillful. And on the other side, the thoughts of renunciation, of compassion and kindness, he said something like, I saw that I could think about these things and it would cause no affliction to anybody, no matter how long I thought about them. I could think about them for a day or a night or a whole day and a whole night, and it wouldn't cause anybody any harm for me to think these thoughts. And then he did go on to say, but if I were to think them for a day and a night, it would agitate the mind, so maybe I should let them go and come back to my meditation. But that's not the part I'm focusing on right now. I'm focusing on this, the non-harming aspect, the non-afflictive aspect of these of thoughts that come out of these three intentions of renunciation, of kindness, and of compassion. So this notion, basically, is that those three aspects of wise intention lead us in a happy direction. They lead us towards non-affliction. They lead us towards non-suffering. And if we're on the other side of the equation, those kinds of intentions lead us to affliction, to suffering. So I want to just kind of quickly look at those three unskillful intentions towards sense desire, cruelty, and ill will, and look at how they might lead to affliction. Well, the two of ill will and cruelty are kind of obvious, how those lead to affliction. They would lead towards affliction towards others. If you have these expressions of ill will or cruelty in your mind, it would tend to lead to acting out of those intentions. So that's pretty obvious. And in a subtler level, it afflicts us as well, because our own minds are agitated and disturbed by these very states of ill will and cruelty. We're not really able to settle into peace or calmness or equanimity of balance of mind if our minds are agitated with thoughts of ill will and cruelty. So not only do they afflict others, they afflict ourselves. What about sense desire? Why is this wanting, or why is this sense desire something that might lead to affliction? Now, it might not obviously lead to affliction to others, for us to get things that we want, to have nice things around us, unless the desire, the sense desire, leads us to perhaps consume more than is available for all and might deprive others of something. That's a way that sense desire can lead to affliction, if we overconsume. I have only to think of our use of oil in this country to see how this has created this sense desire for having transportation, electricity, all of the nice things we have in this country has led to affliction. Or we could also end up behaving in unskillful ways to get those things. This may be more rare for this group, you know, but it can, the desire to have things can lead to stealing, murdering, lying, cheating. It can lead to war. So even sense desire can cause affliction for others. And at a more subtle level, sense desire basically keeps our mind kind of restless, looking for that next hit of some kind of sense satisfaction. Wanting to have pleasant experience, we plan and we scheme, and our minds are not at ease and not at peace, not relaxed, not balanced. So it keeps us, this desire to satisfy this sense pleasure, keeps us in a state of agitation that prevents us from settling into a deeper peace, a deeper kind of happiness of letting go. But the happiness of letting go is a deeper, almost more satisfying, not almost, it is a more satisfying kind of happiness. So the Buddha suggested that we look at these intentions. And in one discourse where he talked to his son, he used this notion of affliction as a way to reflect on these intentions and as a way to reflect on our actions. If something is going to cause affliction to either yourself or others or both, then refrain from that action. And he went on to say, not only look at that, but while you're in the middle of doing something, see if it's causing affliction to yourself or others or both. And if so, then stop doing that action. And after you've done something, reflect back on whether it has caused any affliction. And if it has, then make some amends and see if you can refrain from doing that again. So the Buddha really, he suggested to his own 7-year-old son that he reflect on this question of affliction. This kind of simplifies the intentions. You know, that it's we can think about the 3 intentions as, you know, of ill will, of cruelty, and of sense desire, and think about the 3 more wholesome intentions of kindness, compassion, and renunciation. But it simplifies it a little more to just think about, does this action lead to affliction, or does it lead to non-affliction? So we can reflect, use reflection with respect to intention. And I'd like to do that now for a little while. I'd like to lead you, guide you in a reflective practice. So we'll start, and we'll do this for, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes or so. And we'll start with just a couple of minutes of settling into silence. And then I'm going to ask you some questions to reflect on around intention. And in this reflection, you don't have to think too hard. It's more kind of about seeing what naturally comes to the surface as I pose these questions. Just keep coming back to the question and see what bubbles up as you stay with the question in this space of meditation. So we'll start with a couple of minutes of silence. We all act out of unskillful intentions from time to time. What situations in your life include unskillful intentions and lead to affliction for yourself or others? What situations in your life include unskillful intentions and lead to affliction for yourself or others? Can you recognize a view or belief that underlies the unskillful intentions in those situations? Can you see any view or belief that underlies the unskillful intentions in those situations? How might you bring skillful intention to those situations? Be broad in the ways you reflect on this. You can include the possibility of altering your own behavior, changing the conditions of the situation, or even refraining from or avoiding the situation. Letting go for now of that reflection, taking a breath or two. Reflect on areas of your life or situations in your life that are supported by skillful intentions that lead to happiness, that lead to non-affliction. can you recognize what supports the skillful intention in those situations or areas in your life? And how does it feel to you to reflect on that skillful intention? And letting go of that reflection now, again, taking a breath or two, just settling back into your body. Now I'd like you to think back on what you've reflected on and consider in that reflection which aspects of the reflection you would feel comfortable sharing with others, and which you might not feel comfortable sharing with others. It's fine to have a distinction there. So in reflecting on intention, it can be powerful to speak of that intention to others. And so I'd like to offer each of you an opportunity to do that by creating some small groups where you have an opportunity to share some of what you reflected on in your in the reflection. So what I'd like to do is to create small groups of three or four people, and we'll take only about 12 minutes or so for this. So, you know, let's say, you know, somewhere, you know, 2 to 3 minutes a person to offer their your reflection. I can ring the bell every 3 minutes so people get a sense of how long things are going, but kind of keep track in your own group of make sure everybody has a chance to share. So find yourself in groups of 3 or 4. And do introduce yourselves. So do you have a group? All right, so some of you are in slightly smaller groups and some in slightly larger groups, so you'll have to kind of to keep track for yourself. But I'll basically ring the bell about every 3 minutes so you can kind of keep track of time. So finishing up your conversations and coming back to the larger group. Well, Well, that felt really lovely in here. It's really very nice energy. It was a lot of energy, but it felt good to me. I'm wondering if there's anything that somebody would like to bring to the larger group. I'd like to hear some of what you talked about. Sitting up here timekeeping. Anybody have anything to share?
Ours is kind of easy because we all seem to have the same issues.
This is actually, I think if you took a poll of people in the room, you'd find there's a lot of similarity. Our minds do things very similarly, so go ahead.
We all, three of us, felt we had issues with directing and maybe controlling and telling people what to do, because that's the kind of jobs and kind of either at work, work and in mothering, and knowing when, learning to step back and let reflect a little bit before you open your big mouth and give that advice. And the other one was maybe dealing with some anger issues over, you know, people maybe not following what you think they should be doing, and most of the time you think you're right when you're doing these things. Stepping back, and the issue of mindful listening.
As a support for more skillful intention, the mindful listening.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful, beautiful intention. Thank you. Yeah, over here.
I wasn't going to say anything either, but I think it's ironic that the three of us had some similar things, but were nothing like that. So ours was more with the concept of letting go and finding that place of acceptance in letting go. So our challenge, our mutual challenge seemed to be in where is the point where you let go, where everything is so okay that you give up who you are or you never accomplish anything, and that you're so okay that the people around you then want things of you, but they're okay. And we got caught in this where, how do you find the balance of accepting and yet wanting to strive for something? Mm-hmm. But then, you know, then we got into, there's technology and people that move the world forward wanted something, and they created something that we're all benefiting from, but if we didn't strive for wanting something, we wouldn't have that. So we got caught in this complete wheel of wanting, accepting, where's the balance, where's the line? Uh-huh.
Did you come up with any thoughts?
Absolutely not. We figured we needed another meditation center so that we could leave and not be frustrated.
This is a very common reflection, actually, around this teaching around wanting. You know, it's like, well, if I'm not supposed to want anything, then it basically means I sit back and I'm a lump. And, you know, then, you know, well, how does anything ever happen? You know, that basically we have this kind of sense of basically the world is driven by wanting. And it is largely driven by wanting. It's driven by that unskillful kind of intention. And yet what the teaching is, it's not to simply sit back passively and say, oh, things as they are. Yes, the child is running out into the road. Things as they are. That's not the teaching. You know, the teaching is to take action out of compassion, out of kindness. You know, to pull that child out of the road. So there is action that can be taken. The point is to look at what's the intention underlying the action. Is it one of greediness, of wanting to keep things for yourself? Is it one of generosity, of wanting to offer? And, you know, even in the offering, you know, look at, well, what's the offering about? Is it an offering around well, if I offer this, then I'm going to feel like I'm a really good person. Or is it a selfless offering? Is it an offering that's wanting something in return? Or is it an offering that can just be an offering with nothing needed in return? So there are ways to act skillfully without that kind of underlying sense of give me, give me, give me, give me. And that's what we're looking at here, is that exploration of that underlying intention. So it's a challenge. And we are so conditioned to act out of that wanting and to think that that... I mean, you know, there's two words here. I'll offer you an alternative word for wanting. A skillful kind of wanting could be an aspiration. You know, that we aspire to have... To produce a result in the world, but we don't necessarily cling to that result, or we don't demand that it be a certain way. It's kind of more putting it out there as an offering than as a demand. It's got to be like this. So, you know, looking at our actions and our intentions from that perspective, is it this, you know, give it to me, or is it a more open-hearted kind of intention? Does that help at all? Anyone else have any thoughts?
I had sort of a similar unfocused, less focused, but a feeling of when I'm the center of the world and however I'm being treated or the world is personal, is sort of what I was looking at as the unskillful. And we had stopped on the way here and had a Chinese dinner, and it was very spicy. My stomach was just burning. And when I then switched to the second half and realized sort of everybody thinks they're the center of the world and being open and generous as opposed to demanding. And I noticed my stomach quit hurting.
That's so, very interesting.
So that to me was sort of the biggest shock or whatever.
So that comes to that question, you know, how does it feel to reflect on skillful intention? You know, our hearts open as we think about that. It does change our perspective and change our experience. Yeah, thank you. Anyone else? So I'll finish with a couple of words. There's one famous quote from the Buddha. It's one of my favorite quotes from the Buddha. And it comes from one of the suttas that I was talking about tonight, this sutta talking about looking at the two kinds of thought and seeing that the one kind leads to affliction and the other kind leads away from affliction. And it is... Whatever one frequently thinks and ponders, that becomes the inclination of the mind. If one frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of sense desire, one abandons thoughts of renunciation to cultivate thoughts of sense desire. If one frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of ill will, one abandons thoughts of non-ill will or of kindness to cultivate thoughts of ill will. If one frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of cruelty, one abandons thoughts of compassion to cultivate thoughts of cruelty. Whatever one frequently thinks and ponders on, that becomes the inclination of the mind. A very powerful truth. Now, in our usual state of being, where we are, you know, kind of motivated out of having what we want and not liking and wanting to get rid of things we don't want, we are basically abandoning, renouncing. What we're renouncing is freedom. So if we align ourselves with these more wholesome intentions, the intentions towards kindness, towards compassion, towards letting go, we align ourselves with the truth of things as they are, and we align ourselves with freedom, freedom from suffering. So may you recognize your unskillful intentions and not beat yourself up about them, but reflect on them, observe them, and may you rejoice in your skillful intentions. Thank you all.